tape is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024. Now, I want you to take the chart, and I want you to turn to the page which says to be used with Revelation number 1 tape. Because we have the chart printed on both sides, front and back. Now, some of these things, the reason it is a chart, and let's understand something concerning a chart. A chart is a visual guide. A chart is not dogmatic doctrine. Okay? So therefore, going to ring the bell. However, it is based upon our understanding of scriptures to this particular point, which means that it could change if we come to a greater understanding in the future. Now, what I did with this was I wanted to find out the actual historic flow of the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation can only be understood when you understand the basic prophecies of Daniel. Okay? This is really advanced teaching. This, what you have in the chart, is beyond what was ever done at Ambassador College. None of the ministers in worldwide have ever gone through anything like this. So you're really in graduate school today, if we could put it that way. So let's go ahead and begin understanding. And the book of the Bible which tells us the oldest story is Revelation 12. In history, in time setting, and in flow, Revelation 12 is the oldest historical setting of the book of the Bible. Now, you can read Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That verse is older because that verse goes way back to when God first created everything. Then Genesis 2 says, and the earth became void and without form. There is a space, there is a gap in between. Revelation 12, the first part, shows us what happened in that gap, which then was the rebellion and fall of Satan and the angels. Okay, let's go to Revelation 12. When we get into it a little bit more, this is going to be fun. Okay? Because a lot of little lights of previous learning of prophecy are going to connect. That's what this is designed to, is to connect all these. Okay? Revelation 12 and verse 1. Let's begin there. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. This is the completed spiritual Israel, as it will be in her glorified form. This is symbolic language. This is not the Queen of Heaven. But this is symbolic of the ultimate goal of spiritual Israel being the church and the plan of God. And she being with child. Now it comes down to physical Israel. You see, in a lot of these prophecies, you go from spiritual to physical to spiritual to physical to spiritual to physical. Okay? She being with child cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his heads. Seven and ten is the number of Satan. Now continuing in verse 4, and his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. This verse 3 and verse 4, cover all the rebellion of Satan the devil. That includes Ezekiel 28, Isaiah 14. See, if you want to mark on the chart, go ahead, do that. Mark in your Bible, whatever you want. This is meant to be a working paper. This is not meant to... The chart is not sacred. It's just paper. Write on it. If you need another one, we'll give you another one.
Ezekiel 24 and
25. Ezekiel 28, where it talks about the covering cherubim, cherub that was in the Garden of Eden, okay, was cast down. Isaiah 14, I will ascend above the stars. I will sit on the sides of the north. I will be like the Most High. That is Satan's rebellion. Then put in there Luke 10, 18. Luke 10, 18. Where Jesus said, I saw Satan fall from heaven as lightning. That's when the tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and was cast to the earth. That was the first war in heaven. There is going to come another war. This is the first war. Drew a third part. See what this is. This is a summary in a few words of vast amounts of history and time in Bible history. So therefore, you've got to understand, or at least be familiar with those places in the Bible in order to understand the few words in this verse to what it's saying. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered. Now, you have three things with the woman here. You have the ultimate bride of Christ, visioned in the first verse. Because God's plan was made, what? Before the foundation of the world, correct? And was not Christ slain before the foundation of the earth? Revelation 13, 8. I'll mention these as we go along. You can put it down. Christ slain before the foundation of the world. Okay? Ephesians 1, verses 3 through 10, that God, Ephesians 1, verses 3 through 10, that God has an eternal purpose. This eternal purpose is personified or pictured in this vision of the woman. Okay? Now, we come down to after Satan's rebellion, then we come all the way down to the calling of Israel. Israel became the bride of the Lord God of the Old Testament, correct? Yes. Where the Lord said, I am your husband. You became mine. Now then, We come all the way down to another event that is the next most important thing in physical Israel's existence. And the whole purpose for her existence was what? The whole purpose of her existence was for the Messiah, Jesus Christ, to be born of the Virgin Mary. So therefore, this comes down to Mary symbolizing physically all of God's plan. Why? Because she bore Christ, who was the fullness of God's plan, correct? Now you see, some people get hung up on that fact and say, well, how can it come down that Mary symbolizes this? Because she was the only one to receive the impregnation of God the Father, that's why. Right? Yes. Behold, a virgin shall conceive. Isaiah 8. And Isaiah 9. Unto him, unto us, a child is born, and a son is given, and upon his shoulders shall be the government. And he shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Everlasting God. Okay? That's why. Because that was a tremendous and fantastic event that took place, right? Yes. So therefore, and was Satan there ready to devour the child? Immediately. First thing he wanted to do was get Joseph to divorce her, right? So God had to intervene and send an angel, correct? And say, take her, because this is of God. Why did an angel have to do it? Because no man could testify to the truth of that fact. Would you believe any man saying, well, now, this is from God? If you had a bride that you were espoused to and to marry, and you found her pregnant, that's why an angel had to do it. Okay? Then, when he was born, right after he was born, Herod came after him, right? And an angel appeared to Joseph and said, escape into Egypt. Right? Yes. So Satan was there right to do it. Was Satan there after Christ all the time? How about the temptation? Luke 4, Matthew 4. So you see, when you study the book of Revelation, you've got to have all these facts in the background as you're going. Okay? So she brought forth a man-child. Here's the whole life, death, and resurrection of Christ in one verse. All four of the Gospels reduced to one verse. She brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was, it was still her child, though he was a grown man, right? Is that not correct? Yes. Those of us who have children who are grown up, they're still our children, right? Yes. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. Now then, the woman becomes the church at this point. Why? Because all of those who are in the church, the body of Christ, are going to be what? The bride of Christ. Is that not correct? The church is called the woman because, in Greek, church is a feminine gendered word. Okay? That's why it is the church she. Okay? So then now it's we start out with the plan of God, the ultimate goal of Israel. The conflict with Satan and the war that took place, the birth of the Savior, and it's all carried through as the woman. but it means all three. So unto the woman, and the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared of God that they should be fed there, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Now that's 1,260 years. The church fled in 325 and was virtually disappeared from the face of the earth as far as history that has come to us has been known. That doesn't mean the church did not exist, because it did. That doesn't mean the gospel was not preached, because it was, because you can't have the church without the gospel being preached. So therefore, when Herbert said the gospel was not preached for 1,800 years, that was not a correct statement. It was only correct insofar as it wasn't preached over radio, and it wasn't preached over the printed word, because they didn't have it then. But it was preached. Let's go on. Now then, the next event to occur. This has not yet occurred. Verse 7. And there was war in heaven. When does this war take place? It's still yet ahead of us. When does this war take place? Daniel, the 12th chapter. Let's go to Daniel 12. Daniel 12. Now, this is why the book of Revelation is not for a novice. This is why. The book of Revelation fulfills the understanding of the scriptures, here a little, there a little, verse upon verse, precept upon precept, line upon line. Book of Revelation fulfills that more than every other book in the Bible, because every line, every precept goes back to something profound in the Bible somewhere else. Okay? When does Michael stand up and fight for his people? We have Daniel 12, verse 1, it says, at that time. What is that time? Daniel 11, and verse 40 says, and at the time of the end. That's when Michael will stand up and fight for his people. Which then begins the great tribulation. So therefore, when you look on the chart, now pick up the chart and you will understand why I did it the way I did. Let's look at the chart again and get an overall bearing of the chart. Okay, let's come right across the top where I have first 3.5 years, second 3.5 years, being a total of 7 years. Why? There are two applications of Daniel 9, the last week. The first one has to do with the coming of Christ and cut off in the middle of the week. The second one has to do with the coming of Christ and the last 7 years before his physical presence on the earth, and then the church is going to be cut off. So therefore, we have the last week in the last 7 years. Now, there may be room for some discussion on that in understanding later on, but you have to have some time frame to put it in. So I put it in 7 years. Okay? Now, the reason that we have it 3.5 years on each side to the middle there, the middle of the fourth year is 3.5 years, is because when the beast power comes in, as we'll see later as we go on, there will be 3.5 years of peace and prosperity, and then the beast is going to be wounded with a deadly wound, and bam, when he comes back to life, the tribulation begins. Let's go on. Let's continue. Now then, let's see what happens. Let's continue on. Revelation 12 and verse 9. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which is deceiving, notice the ETH in the King James, is deceiving the whole world. And he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Therefore, we know that the angels that fell with Satan became demons or unclean spirits. Correct? Now, can you think of some verses which will help us understand that even more? Let's go to the book of Jude. Verse 6, Jude 6. There's only one chapter in Jude, so you just have the verse. Jude 6 says, and the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their habitation, he's reserved in everlasting chains under darkness until the judgment of the great day. So those are the angels that followed Satan. That's why it says, and his angels were cast out with him. Yeah, verse 9. Thank you. Let's think for a minute here. This is thinking time. Satan wants to be like God. He failed in destroying Jesus Christ. He failed in his efforts to get Christ to worship him. He failed in his efforts to thwart God. He is going to try once more to take over. This time, he must, in his own mind, be able to destroy God, if he can. So therefore, it is my opinion that most of these fantastic weapons of destruction that we have today are designed to try and kill God. That's why there's war in heaven. I also feel that perhaps maybe this space station thing that we have going on is part of that to get him up in heaven far enough to launch his attack. Just a thought. Not wrong to think. However, it is not doctrine. Could it be, question, could it be that Satan enters into the beast and the beast actually goes up into space to initiate this war? Just a question. And he's cast back down to the earth and survives.
That would be a good place to win.
Just questions. Whenever you have questions and you use your imagination a little bit, don't think it's doctrine. It's interesting. We'll go on. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God, the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuses them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth, for the devil has come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. Now we will answer the question, how long is a short time? As closely as we can. When the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, a second escape, right? Supernatural. Wings of an angel. into the wilderness. Now, it's interesting that the original means into the place, namely her place, which means a specific place of protection. Now then, where she is nourished, for how long? A time, times, and half a time, which is 3.5 years. 3.5 years. Now, a short time. We can answer the question, how long is a short time? Verse 12 says he knows he has a short time. A short time is a little longer than 3.5 years. Agreed? That's the closest we can define it. Because the 3.5 years is the only time definition we have. And his short time is going to end. When is his short time going to end? When the angel comes down, Revelation 20, and puts him in the abyss and locks him in prison, correct? That ends the short time. The beginning of the short time is just before the 3.5 years. So we can say the short time is a little longer than 3.5 years. Can't tell it exactly. Now let's finish chapter 12, because chapter 12 brings us almost to the end of time of human rule. It begins with the plan of God and the vision of spiritual Israel. It comes down through time very quickly to the church going to a place of safety, and then the war, the martyrdom of the saints. Let's continue on here. Verse 15, Revelation 12. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, the earth opened her mouth, swallowed up the flood, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed. Now let's understand something concerning the word remnant. What does a remnant mean in English? It means a small piece left over, namely referring to a bolt of cloth, which is called a remnant. And clothing stores that sold cloth would have a remnant sale. Same way with carpeting. The little bit left over would be a remnant sale. Now, the Greek does not mean that. Merely means the others. No limitation of numbers, no definition of a smaller amount of people, just the others. So the others could be more than the ones who were taken to a place of safety. So every doctrine that has come down concerning the so-called Laodiceans, you see, falls apart, because it could be many more people than what has been given to be understood in the past. We don't know. Doesn't tell us. But the Greek does not mean a small remaining amount. It means the others who were not taken to a place of protection. That's all it means. And he made war with them. Now then, making war with them implies a two-way battle, correct? Question. Could this be some of those who keep some of the commandments of Christ, who are fighting the system of Satan, who are actually arming themselves today with guns and weapons, and who are actually going to fight the forces of the one world government instigated by Satan? Could be. I just put a question mark. The Bible says he who lives by the sword will die by the sword, correct? Yes. Is God going to reject all of those people? Jesus said, he who is with me is not against me. So we have to say, it's possible. Nevertheless, there's going to be the war. with the remnant or the others of her seed which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now then, on the chart. That's why I brought the line down for Revelation 12 to just a little past the 3.5 year period, because the war against the saints starts after those who go to a place of protection have been taken there. Okay. Now, just like in any movie we have today, and the book of Revelation being a vision is more like a movie than we would understand. Now that you've come up to this point, how did the church get to this point? Then we go back to Revelation 1, 2, and 3. Because then that brings us up again to nearly the same point, doesn't it? So just like a story. How many here saw, what was that? Just like the television series Centennial. They would start out with a certain group of people and carry their whole family line up to a certain point. And then they would go back and they would get some others and follow that family line up to a certain point. Then they would go back and get another family line and follow that up to a certain point, and then you came to the center of the story. The book of Revelation is much like that. Now that we've seen where Israel has come down to this point, to where part of her seed are in the church are in a place of protection, war is being made with the rest of them. How did it get to that point? So now we must go back and begin with the seven churches to bring it up to that point. So that's why on the chart, the next thing I have is Revelation 1, 2, and 3. And you will see the reason for it as we go along. Now let's go to Revelation 2. Revelation 2 and 3. Revelation 1 is the introduction to it. Revelation 1 shows that Christ is in charge. Christ is in the midst of his church. And Revelation 2 then starts out with the churches. Let's back up to Revelation 1 and let's begin with verse 19 as we lead into Revelation 2. And this becomes a very important thing. Because now we have to come back to the exact time of John when he was receiving this vision on the Isle of Patmos, which was about 90 AD. Notice the instruction after he saw one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the feet, with his face shining like the sun in brilliance, and his eyes like a flame of fire, and his feet as undefined brass, and he fell as he was dead. And let's go to verse 18. Jesus said, I am him that lives and was dead, and behold, I am alive evermore. Amen. And have the keys of the grave and death. Which means no one's going to get out of the grave unless Christ brings them out. No one. Write these things which you have seen. First part of Revelation, the first chapter. He saw that. You have seen. And the things which are. That means beginning now. And the things which shall be hereafter from this point to the end. So he begins to explain the things which are. The mystery of the seven stars which you saw in my right hand and the seven golden candlesticks. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. And the seven candlesticks which you saw are the seven churches. Then he starts chapter 2. Why are there seven churches? Because this Revelation 2 and 3 shows the 7 weeks of the harvest going to Pentecost. 7 weeks, seven churches. The time frame of the activity of the seven churches does not necessarily equal in time a week, but it shows the harvest. Let's just state it this way. Revelation 2 and 3 shows everything that the churches would be confronted with when Satan comes against them, every doctrinal problem, every attitude problem, everything that we as Christians would experience. That's why it always ends in saying, "He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches." So he took seven literal churches that were in existence. So at that time, it meant the seven churches listed. These churches also became seven churches in prophecy. How do we know that? Revelation 5. Revelation 5 and verse 6. "And behold, and lo, in the midst of the throne of the four living creatures," it says four beasts, but living creatures would be a preferable translation, "in the midst of the elders stood a lamb as had been slain, having seven eyes, seven horns and seven eyes." Now, what is a horn in the Bible? A horn is a king or a kingdom, correct? In this case, we are talking about Christ. Christ is called what in relationship to the church? The head, correct? Christ is the head. Where do these seven horns appear on Christ? Out of his head. Showing that Christ is in charge of all seven churches through all history. That's what it means. So therefore, Revelation 2 and 3 is everything we have ever understood. The seven literal churches, the seven prophetic churches, although not exactly in eras as it was once preached. It shows all of the doctrinal problems, all the confrontation with Satan, and so forth. So therefore, notice on the chart, Revelation 1, 2, and 3, I have the church age, seven churches, and notice where the line goes. All the way down to the middle, the 3.5 years, and then I have a dotted line after that. Why do I have a dotted line there? Because there is going to come a time when those people who are in the church that are not in the place of safety will be martyred. So I left the dotted line there to indicate the martyrdom. Okay? Now, after the seven churches, we come to the next section, which is Revelation 4 and 5. And this shows that before the end time events beginning in chapter 6 take place, that there has to be the exact time and the power of God from heaven above to give the okay. How is that okay or that authority given? First of all, John is called up and sees the tremendous throne of God. And the four living creatures saying, "Holy, holy, holy, Lord God Almighty." Let's come here, Revelation 4. Revelation 4 and verse 11. You are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for you have created all things, and for your pleasure they are and were created. Fantastic verse, brethren. Awesome verse. The whole purpose of the Bible is contained in that one verse. Do you realize that? So this is God's eternal purpose. Now then, the vision continues. And here is the scroll with seven seals. And no one could open the scroll. John was crying and saying, no one can open the scroll with the seven seals. And then it says, the Lion of the tribe of Judah and the Lamb that has seven horns, he is worthy, he will open the scrolls. Okay? Now notice. Let's come down here to verse 9, showing, again, now you're going to find this a lot in the book of Revelation. We're going to come along to a certain point and then be projected to the end, which we have right here. Verse 9. They sung a new song, saying, you are worthy to take the book, to open the seals thereof, for you were slain and have redeemed us, the saints, to God by every blood out of every kindred, or by your blood rather, out of every kindred, every tongue and nation, and you have made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. So after we're resurrected, meet Christ in the air, we're going to come back to the earth after Pentecost on the next trumpets, and we're going to reign on the earth. We'll not be in heaven for 1,000 years. That, unfortunately, is an error of Ellen G. White. Now then, we find a tremendous scene here that the Lamb is worthy to open the book. So he came to the throne of God, and there was given him the book, and he opened the seals. Now let's go to the chart. Revelation 6 follows right along. And since I've done the chart, the question was asked, when is God going to cut short? It doesn't mean cut short the time, it means cut short the activity. And I get really tired of preachers saying events are speeding up or slowing down, speeding up and slowing down, speeding up and slowing down, and we're all getting whiplash. They're not speeding up, they're not slowing down, they are right on time. And what it is our perception of the intensity of an activity, which to us makes it seem like it is speeding up, but it's not. It's happening right on time. Now then, since I have done the chart, and I'll have to explain something here, let's come to the chart, Revelation 6. I have the six seals open. Notice I have beginning of the first seal not clear. It still is not clear. I wrote an article back in 1980 where I said that I thought at that time the first seal was open when John Paul II was coronated as Pope, because he was such a dynamic Pope at that time. He could speak fluently and in any conversation change the conversation to any one of 45 languages. Any one of 45 languages. That's awesome. However, I think that opinion was not correct. I'm beginning to see that it's going to be something greater. The Pope, I'm sure, will be involved, but it is going to be greater than that. I still don't know exactly when it's going to be. So the first seal is open, and it's the white horse. You all know that. Since this is a summary, we're not necessarily going to read every verse from here on. But notice one thing about this, the one that's sitting on the white horse. White is symbolic of righteousness, but also white covering an evil person is symbolic of the wrong righteousness. He's on a white horse. Notice he has limited power. He that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given, and he went forth conquering to conquer. Notice the next one has a sword, has a different kind of power. Tapes that I did before, I was just using my hand-drawn charts. Okay? Now, back to the first seal. Revelation 6. Let me give you my opinion of how I see the first seal coming to pass. And by the way, it is not true that the seals were opened beginning with the time of Jesus as defined in Matthew 24. The first seal was not opened when the first false prophet came along. That's what Worldwide used to teach. Matthew 24 gives us a definition of these things, but it does not give us the time sequence of these things. These events happen right at the end time, right when the decision of God is made, because Jesus said, "No man knows the hour or the time, but my Father only." So when the Lamb comes before the Father, who is sitting on the throne, and the Father gives him the seals, the book with the seals, then he will know the time. So that's why you have Revelation 4 and 5 take place before you get to Revelation 6. So there, that event in Revelation 4 and 5 is going to happen. And when it happens, the very first thing is going to be this white horse that comes out all of a sudden. Now, why did he use a horse instead of a snail? Because it's going to happen quickly. So view these as horses lined up in a starting gate, and the bell rings, opening of the seal, and out runs this horse. So the first horse comes out, and I think this is the coming new one world religion. Now, I talked about it at the Feast of Tabernacles a little bit. It's developing more and more, and I feel that this religion is going to be a new age old Babylonian religion, which includes goddess worship. Sophia, I've got a newspaper clipping showing that they're doing that now. Big long article on it. Mary worship is going to come into vogue in the Catholic Church like as never before. There are going to be visions of Mary. There are going to be visions of Sophia. And I believe that the image of the beast is the woman. Now, when I first read that in Alexander Hislop's Two Babylons, when he defined the image of the beast, I said, he can't be right. 25 years later, I am saying, he was probably very right. But it's not going to be just Mary alone. It is going to be the Queen of Heaven, the old Babylonian goddess. Now, most of us do not understand, because we have been brainwashed into believing that the religion of the Jews has always been uniformly faithful to the scriptures. Wrong. The Dead Sea Scrolls show that there were sects of Jewish communal believers who worshiped the sun and the moon and the stars, the Essenes, who believed also in circumcision and the holy days. And I've been reading from the Kabbalah, the mystic religion of the Jews, and it is Hinduism. Believe me. Yes. So with all of these religions coming together, I think this white horse signals a mass movement of all people in the whole world to be overcome by this whole false religious system. Now, in charge of it may end up being the Pope. Yes. So let's put on our thinking caps and let's do like God does. Think not just big, but huge, global, if I could use that term. Worldwide, if I could use that term. Okay. These are going to be mammoth events with miracles, with false preaching, with undeniable things that you cannot discount. And therefore, it is going to be a separation of God's people from the religions of this world. And if you don't separate from it, you're going into it, and it will become part of the New World religion. And some of the churches of God are getting set up to fall right into it. So when it talks about the deception that's going to come, it is going to be awesome. And there are going to be some people running around when this first seal is open saying, "Help me, help me, help me, help me, help me." And it's going to be just like Matthew 25. We can't give you of our oil. You go to the one that sells and buy. In other words, you go to Christ. Maybe you can buy some. Now, that's why, brethren, when people come in contact with us, we send them a care package. Because we consider this some oil for their lamps. And we consider this some spiritual meat for their bones. This is going to be the New Age religion. And you would be surprised that ancient Judaism worshipped angels. So it's not going to surprise me if they do not discover in the Dead Sea Scrolls the true gospel of Satan, not of Christ. Yes. Biggest mistake to ever think was that Judaism was faithful. They were not, never have been, never will be, and when you say it, duck and run. So when this comes in, this is coming along with the rising of the beast. Now notice what I have. The seals here. Notice what I have. The first seal. Let's come to Revelation 6. First seal. How long it is to the second seal, we do not know. Because the second seal is going to be when the tribulation starts. So a lot of events have to catch up between seal 1 and seal 2. Okay? So that's why when you go down, when we come down to Revelation 13 and so forth, it fits in there. Now, then I take each one of the seals and go right down in time. The second seal is the beginning of the tribulation. 3.5 years. Come to the middle of the chart. See the X there? That's the second seal. Then immediately, seal 3, 4, and 5 come real quickly. Now take your finger under 3, 4, and 5 and go straight up to the next X, which is the martyrdom of the saints. And that brings us concurrent with where we ended Revelation 12. Now we're beginning to do the catch-up and the connections. Okay? Then we come all the way down, as I explained on Pentecost, we come down to the sixth seal, and the sign of the Son of Man appears in heaven. And as I explained, that probably takes place just prior to the next to the last Pentecost. It is going to be a mammoth event when that takes place. Because the sign of the Son of Man, I feel, is going to be like the revelation of a sun in outer space that is coming closer and closer to the earth. Because it's going to shine like the sun from east to west, meaning that as you on the earth, everyone is going to see it. Because that's how the sun shines from east to west, because the earth is turning. Now, when it gets closer and closer to the earth, then by the time we come to the last Pentecost, it's going to come right down in the clouds, and it will lock in orbit right over Jerusalem, and that is the sea of glass. That becomes then the sea of glass, Revelation 14. So I'm kind of projecting ahead here just a little bit so we can understand. But it begins at the beginning of the third year. Notice what I have right here, at the beginning of the... Let's come down here, Revelation 7, okay? Revelation 7, sixth seal is opened, and we have to the resurrection a year and a half. See where the sixth seal is open? Come down to the next one, Revelation 7, 144,000 great innumerable multitude are sealed, okay? Now, as I defined on the Pentecost sermon, that at the end of 2 years of the tribulation, that's when this is going to take place. We have approximately a year and a half left. Now, let's come down to the next one, Revelation 8. After the sealing of the great innumerable multitude and 144,000, we have the seven trumpet plagues. Six of them are blown very quickly, aren't they? Yes. And as I pointed out on the sermon for Pentecost, there is a period of time in which these things are blown. Takes place. Then we come all the way down to the ending of the second woe. You see that? Follow along with the chart, Revelation 8 and 9, all the way to the end of that. Then Revelation 10 is a very short space of time. Let's go to Revelation 10. We'll focus a little on this. And let's understand something concerning Revelation 10. Let's read it, and then we'll understand. Verse 1. I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as it were, the Son and his feet as pillars of fire. So we know that this is not Christ because it's not the same description as Christ, but it's an angel. And he had in his hand a little book. Question, who had the book? The angel. Did a man write it? No. Some men have claimed that they have written the little book. Not so. Okay? Where was this book written? In heaven, because that's where the angel came from. And if he came from heaven and had in his hand the little book, guess where it was written? In heaven, yes. Now, that's hard to figure out, isn't it? Okay? And he set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot upon the earth. He cried with a loud voice as a lion roars. And when he cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. And when the seven thunders uttered their voices, I was about to write. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered and write them not. What is the message of the seven thunders? You got it. We don't know. The question was, why did God tell him not to write the seven thunders? I think the seven thunders are so horrible that it would take too long to write them. But it's going to be quick and fast, and just like thunder, boom, boom, boom. He said, don't write it. So if anyone says they have written the seven thunders, don't believe them. That's their own thunder. Okay? Got to have a little humor in this, but it's really not a thunder. It's kind of like a bang. Okay. And this covers just a short period of time. Because the sixth seal ended, this is just before the seventh seal, the seventh trump, the sixth trump ended. This is just before the seventh trump. Okay, let's continue. And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven, swore by him that created heaven and earth and the things that are therein, the earth and the things that are therein, the sea and the things that are in, saying that there should be delay no longer, not time. Time does not end. It continues. There should be no more delay. That implies there has been a delay. That would be as we may view it. But not really. Because when you see a lot of events going on in horror and slaughter and blood and death and millions of corpses in vision, you want to hurry up and get it over with, so it seems like things have been delaying, but it hasn't. Okay? But that, it just, no more, it's not going to take much longer, would be the best way to put it. No more delay. Now, verse 7. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when, and it should read, he is about to sound. When he's about to sound, not begin, because when you begin, you are blowing it. When he's about to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he declared to his servants, the prophets. And so then, here's another real quick mission, that wherever the ministers of God are, wherever the people of God are, they have to go out and witness once more and say, this is it. So they go to many nations and so forth, verse 11. Okay. That's why when I showed on the chart Revelation 10, I went all the way down and we have just a little short space there. I don't know how long it is, so I just put it in there for the record. Okay, now let's fold it the other way and come down to Revelation 11. Revelation 11 is, again, we come back to a certain point and we go forward to the same ending point, which is the resurrection. So we back up, because there are events that took place that we now have to come, because the resurrection is not going to take place until the two witnesses are done, and we need to explain about the two witnesses, so we back up in time and begin with the ministry of the two witnesses. Let's do that. Revelation 11 and 1. There was given to me a reed like unto a rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of God and the altar and them that worship therein. And the court which is without the temple leave out and measure it not, for it's given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall be tread underfoot for 42 months. This is a literal 42 months at the end. We know that there is also a prophetic 42 months beginning with 70 AD up to a certain point. That is true. But at the end time, we're dealing with a literal 42 months. Now, we have been told in the past this. Let's read on and we'll understand something. 42 months, verse 3 now. I will give power to my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days in sackcloth, or 1,260 days. Correct? Yes. We were always told in the past that 42 months equals 1,260 days. Wrong. They do not start at the same time, and they do not end at the same time, and when we get to the other chart, we will see why. I'll basically project forward and tell you why. When does the 42 months of the beast end? When he's cast into the lake of fire. That ends the 42 months of the beast. Correct? Pictured by which holy day? The Feast of Trumpets. That's when he is cast in. Satan is bound on atonement. Pictured by that. Okay? Because you can never be at one with God until Satan is removed. I don't care how righteous you are. If Satan is around, you can never be at one with God. Let's not get bogged down. We'll cover that later. Let's back up here. Okay. When does the two witnesses' 1,260 days end?
When Jesus returns.
Not quite. Not quite. Literally, when does the 1,260 days plus 3.5 days end? At the resurrection. And if the resurrection is on Pentecost, their 1,260 days ends considerably before the 42 months, correct? Yes. So this, now brethren, I'll tell you a secret. This is what got me started on the whole thing, this verse right here. Because I read that and I said, we've always been told that a prophetic year is 360 days. Why? Who said so? Where in the scriptures does it say it? Doesn't tell us? Nowhere. So I said, maybe that's an assumption that isn't correct. We've always been told that 42 months, number two, is the same time frame as 1,260 days. If it is, why use two different terms of measurement? The reason is, 42 months applies to the beast, 1,260 days apply to the two witnesses, and they end at different points, so they must begin at different points. Correct? Have to be. So God is telling us two things, not one. Doesn't that turn on a lot of lights? Bing! That's why it's defined in different terms. You have two people. They both die in their 60th year. But one was born 3 months sooner. One died before the other by 3 months, though they lived the same length of time. They didn't start life at the same time. So therefore, the ministry of the two witnesses, because it ends first, must begin first. Now, we'll see that when we get to the chart on the other side. Okay? So therefore, I have, notice what I have here. Look at the chart. Revelation 11, two witnesses, 1260 days. They end at the first resurrection because they're resurrected, correct? And right as they're resurrected, bang, the trumpet blows and the resurrection occurs, correct? We'll see that in just a minute. And if the resurrection is on Pentecost, and we later see the beast and the false prophet still alive, therefore the 42 months for the beast and false prophet have an overlapping time frame, but they don't begin at the same time, nor they end at the same time. Therefore, 42 months is not 1260 days. You can have a month, you can count a whole month being 3 weeks. You could have a 3 week month at each end of it, and you will not have 1260 days, but you have 42 months. Okay? God expects us to think. These are thinking scriptures. These are profound scriptures. We must deal with them as they actually are. That's why God gave us two different time frames. Okay? So on the chart, I showed this visually. The two witnesses begin right at the end of the third year, just before the tribulation. Why is that important? Because the Jews in Jerusalem must have a witness there before the destruction comes. And God is going to give it. Who are the two witnesses? Do I think they're alive today? Most probably are. Are. Same way with the beast, he most probably is. But he hasn't been revealed yet. I believe that the two witnesses are exactly what they tell us in Zechariah 3 and 4. Zechariah 3, it is the priest, the high priest at the temple called Joshua. Zechariah 4 is the governor of Judea. So I think that God is going to supernaturally call the high priest and bring him to repentance, because it says in Zechariah 3, he is covered with filthy garments. He's going to bring him to repentance, bring the governor of Judea to repentance, and they are going to dress in sackcloth and ashes, and they will be the two witnesses to stand before God. And they are going to give a witness beginning in Jerusalem, because that's where their ministry is. And it's going to be powerful. You read all the power they have. Notice what it says, verse 4 of the two witnesses. These are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. This is God's direct intervention to these people. It is not a church. It is no one who is a Christian today. It is going to be a conversion of Jews, because Jews will only listen to Jews. Period. So that's who it's going to be. I think. I can't see it any other way. Now, I'll have to give a caveat this much, that I see no other evidence to say that it is not, but since we're not perfect in understanding, we have to give room for correction later down the road if something comes along to show that that's not correct. Okay? Now then, let's go on. Let's come to verse 11. The second woe is past, the third woe comes quickly, and the seventh angel sounded. This is the resurrection. Okay? This is the last Pentecost. So that's why I have down here the two witnesses being resurrected at the last Pentecost. Okay? The line just before that is the last Passover. Dotted line just before that. Okay. Now let's come on. Revelation 17 and Revelation 13. Now that we've dealt with the two witnesses, now we'll deal with the beast. Okay? And I'm going to show you why that people are in error looking for 10 kings out of Europe. The question came up concerning the two witnesses and relationship to the last part of Revelation 10. You'll have the two witnesses going on for the 1260 days. Revelation 10 is a very short ministry which supports that, but it is the Christian witness of Christians. Okay? God is going to give many witnesses. Now then, after all the saints are resurrected, then you have the three angels' message. Why do the three angels give the message then? Because there are no more human beings on earth who have not been resurrected to preach. In other words, all Christians will be resurrected at Pentecost, right? Be on the sea of glass. There are no human beings on earth to preach the gospel because they've all been resurrected. So God is going to send three angels to supernaturally bring the message, the last-minute message, before the seven last plagues. Well, the mixed multitude will be resurrected at the same time. All will be resurrected at the last trump. Okay? No more physical human Christians, all spirit-born resurrected. That's why the three angels. Okay, I'm sort of getting ahead of myself, you see, but that's what happens when you get into this. Let's go along to Revelation 17. Now, first of all, we see the great whore, which is the great religious system of this world, and her daughters. Let's focus in on verse 5. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. All the daughters are coming home to Greater Babylon. Catholics, Buddhists, Protestants, Hindus, Shinto, animists, Satan worshippers. All of them. That's why this amalgamation of the one world global religion I have nicknamed Gobel. Because they are all coming home. Every form of religion that accepts the new religious revelation of the new age will be accepted. Jewish, Protestant, Catholic, all of them. There is going to be a dividing line. Okay? All the daughters come home. Are they coming home? Yes. Not just the Catholic Church. Down through time, this prophecy applied directly to the Catholic Church because the prophecy could be applied at any time to identify Satan's system. Without a doubt. But there is more than one interpretation to Revelation 17. That's what we have to understand. When the Church of God, Seventh Day, in the 17 and 1800 said, this is Rome. They were correct. But Alexander Hislop wrote his book, The Two Babylons, and showed not only is it Rome, but it's also all the other religions of the world. So if you have never read Alexander Hislop's Two Babylons, it's tough reading, but boy, it is good stuff. Okay? When I started reading it, I read it a bit at a time. It took me all summer to read it because it is so detailed. Do not read the footnotes as you go through. They are so complicated, by time you get done reading some of the footnotes in Alexander Hislop's The Two Babylons, and then come back to where you were in the text of the book, you are mentally lost. So do this. Read through a whole section. When you understand that whole section, then go back and read all the footnotes as it pertains to the different thing. Because he has some footnotes that run for two pages in minute print. Okay? Now, let's continue on. Let's look at the last one. Look at the last one, and then we will go ahead and end here and take a break and then come back. Okay. Let's come to verse 11, or verse 10. There are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, another is not yet come, and when he comes, he must continue but a short space. Okay? And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth. Now, how can you get eight out of seven? Because the deadly wound was healed, and the seventh one became the eighth, because he was brought back to life. That's how it's happened. Okay? No, not the Pope. This is the world leader. World leader. The king, the world leader, the king... in all pagan religions was the representative of God. The emperor was God incarnate. If you recall, the last one was the emperor of Japan, correct? He was the manifestation of God, the sun god. The emperor, or the civil ruler, is the one who proclaims himself to be God. The false prophet says, he is God. So, yes, the Pope will verify that he is. The Pope will never say he's God. No one will buy that. But if the Pope says, this man is God, everyone will say, yea, verily, yea. Now, that's how the beast, which was seventh, becomes eight, because this one, in verse 11... is the beast of Revelation 13. Verse 11 is the beast, the first beast of Revelation 13. Okay, we're almost done here. We'll pick up next time with Revelation 13. Let's continue. Let's look at the ten horns. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings which received no kingdom of yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. Question, how long is an hour? 60 minutes in actual time. That's right. That's a correct answer. In prophecy, think of this. In prophecy, how long is 1 hour? Is it much less than 3.5 years? Obviously have to be, otherwise it would say here times, times, and half a times, but it doesn't say it, does it? It says 1 hour. Therefore, everyone who's looking for 10 kings in Europe are going to be disappointed, because these are not kings until right at the end, and they receive power as kings for what? purpose. Let's read it. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength to the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. They come together and are made kings because of the crisis of the world battle against Christ. And they fight Jesus Christ. They are not manifest as kings until then, which is way down into the tribulation after the Pentecost resurrection. So if you're looking for 10 kings in Europe, you will never find them. Now then, because it specifically says, these shall make war with the Lamb. Right? That's why they're made kings. Now, I will have to ring the bell of opinion, and I will end it here in Revelation 16. In the world economic, let's back up. Who really runs the world? The politicians or the bankers?
Bankers,
you got it. But they are not out front as the leaders, are they? No. Okay. Are we dealing with a crisis in the world when they see Christ coming back to the earth? Yes. Do extraordinary means have to be taken? Yes. Did you know that the world is divided into 10 regions under 2 auspices? 1, the United Nations. 2, the world banking system. Are we going to be dealing in economics? Yes, we'll see that on the next tape, Mark of the Beast, correct? Now you come to a point that Christ is ready to invade the earth. The kings of the earth, many of their armies have been destroyed, but there's going to be the final battle. Let's go to Revelation 16. You got to appoint new kings, right? That's why these become kings. They receive no power as yet as kings, but 1 hour with the beast, because I feel that the leading banker in each of these 10 regions, or the leading political figure of the United Nations 10 regions, which are the same, will be thrust upon him the responsibility of being king to muster the armies to fight Christ. So that's when the 10 kings will be manifest, and we won't be on the earth to see that. We'll be on the sea of glass watching it. The question it was brought up, the comment was made, are not all of these UFOs and people from outer space and so forth preparing the way? Yes. The first ones will come and say, we're going to, and it would not surprise me to say, we're bringing the new religion to the earth. Ha ha ha. Oh, miracles. Then when Christ comes, they're going to say, that's the enemy, that's the enemy. And the Pope's going to say, that's the Antichrist. And all of the armies of the earth are going to have to be gathered together, because if we don't fight him, he's going to come and destroy the earth and conquer the earth. So what happens? Revelation 16 and verse 12. Here's the crisis. All the angels sound, and all of this destruction comes. Now the whole of the Babylonian world system is on the verge of total collapse. So what happens? The sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates. The waters thereof were dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And I saw 3 unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, out of the mouth of the false prophet. For these are spirits of demons working miracles to go forth unto the kings of the earth. And out of the kings there will be 10 who will be selected at that time to unite with the beast power. And of the whole of kings of the earth and of the whole earth to gather them to the battle of the great day of Almighty. So they are made kings for 1 hour to make war against the Lamb, and that is the battle of Armageddon. So if you're looking for 10 kings in Europe, keep looking. I hope I can see them from the sea of glass looking down. Okay, we'll end here.
Explain what he does with that dangling day. And I could go to Exodus 16, where he tried to prove that this is the way that God does it, and I could prove that that was not so, because it didn't go from that time, and then when you come to the 30th day, you have the dangling day, and then you don't go on from there, okay, and then you start again, because the manna for 40 years came every 6 days, irrespective of the month, okay? Latest heresy. I'm glad I get these things so I can keep up with it. I mean, it's something else, okay? Well, you have to come to the first full moon of the first month. And then you start counting 7 days from there. And then it's every 7 days from there until you come to the full moon where it's 30 days. And then you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, it rotates through the week. That's correct. All right. Then I got a letter from a man in Canada, which was a very interesting letter, and I appreciate him sending it. And he commented on the series that we did, Who is Jesus? Because in discussing with a lot of people, a lot of the things come up that we cover here, and a lot of it is that all of this heresy is being sent out to everybody everywhere. Because the way to do it is, you get the Directory of Sabbath-Keeping Organizations, okay? And you make a mass mailing to everybody. So everybody gets all the heresy. So that's why the church is being assaulted by all of this, okay? Here's another letter from a man who is from Phoenix, Arizona. He says, enjoy and get much out of your tapes. I thought you would drop me off from the mailing list. No, we won't. Because I missed last month and received no tapes. That's because we delayed until we got caught up on the tape there for several weeks. I am on a limited income. And we're not asking people on limited incomes to send in money or anything like that. I gave that sermon on to give or not to give because I hadn't given any in 5 years. So that tells you how often we so-called, quote-unquote, beg for money. So no, we won't cut him off at all whatsoever. He's doing just fine. And he says, limited income. And so, anyway, he says he has to adjust to the time to get by, which is understandable. Thank you for your understanding. God bless you, and I am praying for you. Thank you. I need your prayers every day, especially if each week goes like last week, which was another hallabalooser of a week. And it ends up that I have to end up telling these people how to do their work because they don't know how to do it, or they get some silly person on there who doesn't know how to do the work and doesn't do the work and doesn't know. Let me give you an example. I'm doing a loan, second loan for these people. We just closed the first one. Sent a true copy from the closing of the escrow showing that their past first mortgage and their past second mortgage was paid in that escrow. You can't get any better than a true, verified copy from the title company. That's accepted anywhere. So what do they want? They want us to go to the bank to get verification that it was paid. Not even kidney beans between the eyes. Okay? We will do that. However, I'm going to send them that nice little educative letter. So much for my week. And then I came home at 3 o'clock yesterday and found that chapter 4 and 5, boom, gone. All right? So I feel much better today. Much, much better today. I thought it was a bad day for me yesterday. And then I listened to the Messiah coming up, and I was going through the part which says, Man of sorrows, despised and rejected. And I thought, oh, you know, your little problems are stupid. Okay? Now, then I have another letter from someone back in the Midwest there. He says, I appreciate your concern behind the tapes and material you sent me. So he says that they, I'll just summarize some of it so it won't get too personal on a public mailing here. That they left WCG in August 1990 and they joined the efforts of the Philadelphia Church of God. Well, I just mentioned one that's sending out all kinds of heresy and so forth. PC formed in 1990 in order to hold fast traditions, past instructions once taught by the true church and proclaim a warning to the Laodiceans. As you well know, WCG is veering far from God's truth in many areas. Yes, it is going quickly, very rapidly. We believe this is both a separation and a sifting of the Philadelphians, Laodiceans, and I might add all of God's people, okay? As a one-time Philadelphian minister, I trust you will know what this means. Though we have no intentions of breaking fellowship with PCG, I do appreciate your concern. I also appreciate your material on the Passover 14-15 question. You have the best material on that subject we've ever seen. Keep up the good work in that regard. In your cover letter, you state you are hard at work on the book on the Passover question. Rumor is circulating in the PCG that the WCG is leaning to a 15th Passover. If you have any verification of this, let me know. No, I don't. We know starting in 1990, many local WCG congregations began the Passover service before sunset on the 13th. Now, that's news to me, or it's a rumor, or it's false, or it is true. I can't verify. So there's obvious confusion within the ranks of the WCG as well as other Sabbath-keeping groups. In your new book, if your new book is done as well as your harmony, it could greatly benefit those of God's people who are desperately trying to hold fast to his word, which is the critical thing we need to do at this time. Let me encourage you to speed the book along. Please put me down for a preview copy when it's finished, etc., so forth. Be interested. Fine. Be happy to. We will do that. However, since we're in the book of Revelation, let's cover just a few things of importance, okay, in relationship to some of the things here, in relationship to some of the other things that we have gone through. Okay, now, in relationship to the comment made here in this letter, which is made by others, okay, which is also the title of this publication, which, by the way, is put out by Ed and Cindy Burson, which is entitled Holding Fast the Faithful Word. Very good article on government. Very, very good. If you haven't read it, I'll leave it here and you can pass it around and go over it. Now, we need to ask the question, is holding fast the only thing we are to do? What are some of the other things we are to do? Okay, preach the gospel, that's fine. Grow in grace and knowledge. Now, there are even some people that say if you have too much knowledge, you get vain, because after all, what we really need is love. Now, that's a somewhat of a true statement. But the Bible also says that we don't know anything as we ought to know it yet. Correct? Yes. When Christ is ruling on the earth, how much is the knowledge of God going to cover the earth? Like the waters cover the sea. Yes. Therefore, in growing in knowledge, we are also growing in love and grace. Absolutely we are. Because if you grow in the knowledge of the Lord, who is what? Our Savior, who loves us, and we love Him, do we not grow in love? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So that's important. So holding fast is a key thing we need to do. Striving for the faith once delivered to the saints is a key thing we need to do. Growing in grace and knowledge is the key thing we need to do. And again, we're seeing that you don't take one aspect, and I'm sure that he didn't in this letter mean to fight against those other aspects of it, but you have to have all of it together. Now, let's go to Revelation 2 and 3, because I want to cover a few things which are extremely important concerning the churches, and then we will get into the next chart that we have here, so we can put together some other things in Revelation and Daniel. All right? Revelation 2 and 3, as you know, contain the letter to the letters to the seven churches. Now, before I even got this letter, as I was driving along, I was thinking, after listening to this one tape from the Church of God Philadelphia era, The Heresy on the Sabbath, I started noting to myself the churches that call themselves Philadelphia that I have heard of. This is one. PCG is another. There's another Philadelphia church supposedly in Enid, Oklahoma. There's a group out of Honolulu who have a little candelabra, like the seven candlesticks, and it says Philadelphia era. There is a Seventh-day Adventist church in San Francisco that says we are the Philadelphia era. Worldwide Church of God says it's the Philadelphia era. No one is claiming to be the Laodicean era, except some Seventh-day Adventists. You know, that takes a lot of courage to say we are Laodiceans. All right. I haven't heard anyone yet say, I am a Sardisite, which is the one that's dead, supposedly. All right. Now, let's go to Revelation 3 and verse 3 concerning the Sardisites. And especially for those who think that when, which a lot of our people on the mailing list are, they were in the worldwide Church of God, which they may have been, that was the only Church of God on earth, which it wasn't. Okay? That just because, by proclamation, or organization, or corporation, or doing business as, or by agreement, or by association, you call yourself something, does not make you that something. Is that not correct? Okay? Just to show you how some of these arguments kind of fall apart. Here for the Church of Sardis, Revelation 3, and verse 1, it says, "And unto the angel of the church in Sardis write, these things says he that has the seven stars of God, seven spirits of God, rather, and the seven stars. I know your works, that you have a name, that you live and are dead. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfect before God. Remember, therefore, how you have received and heard, and hold fast. Who is the message to hold fast to? Well, obviously, to all the churches, that is true, but particularly to Sardis. Why? Because they're ready to die. So if a person's whole spiritual life only consists of holding fast to what they learned in the WCG some years ago, you're on a dead-end street. You're on a dead-end street. Can you grow in grace and knowledge by doing that? No. Okay. Now, let's go back and we'll just some of this I will do seriously, some of it I will do facetiously, some of it I will do in jest, a little bit like Paul said when he said, you're making me be foolish because of what you're doing. Okay? Now, the church at Ephesus, okay, I haven't heard anyone say that they're Ephesians either. They lost their first love, okay? Because a person says that they are of the Church of Ephesus era, are they Ephesians? Answer, don't know. Who is the one who really knows who belongs in what, if you want to say, category that God puts his churches in? Who's the one who really knows? God is the one, obviously, yes. He knows. Christ is the head of the church, right? Do not these seven churches explain all the problems of all the churches of all time? Yes, they do. Okay, let's come to the next one. I have yet to hear someone say, I'm from Smyrna, kill me. I say that in a little bit of jest. Okay? A little bit of modern sick humor, if you could put it that way. Okay? But they are actually the most faithful of all. Remember when we went through this some time ago, we said, well, now, let's not fall into the realm of human debate and figure out which is the best church, and then we will proclaim that we're that one. Because we want to. Okay? Now then, we come to Pergamos. And obviously, Pergamos, they said, boy, now we live here in Satan's seat in Pergamos, and you know there's some good things about Satan's organization. Now what we're going to do is we're going to take the best of Satan's organization, and we're going to weld that together with the Church of God, and we're going to have the best organization around. Okay? Voila, you have the Catholic Church. Which things of the Nicolaitans and so forth God says he hates. I have yet to hear someone say, I'm a Pergamite. All right? However, I think from what we read here and understand about the doctrine of the Nicolaitans of lording it over the people, wherever you have a dictatorship of the congregation, you have Nicolaitans indeed. The next one we have, hooray, we've got women preachers. We are liberated. All right? We have love. We are great. But God says that, you know, you came close to knowing the depths of Satan, and yes, even some of you have in Thyatira. All right? We've already covered the Sardis church. And as I said about the Laodiceans, you know, only the Seventh-day Adventists, and not all of them, even claim that they may be the Laodiceans. No one wants to be a Sardisite. No one wants to be a Laodicean. No one wants to be a Smyrnaite so they can give their lives. No one wants to be a Nicolaitan because God is going to fight against them. And since the Ephesians are so far back there that, well, you know, that's way back at the beginning of the church, we can't be that. So, in reading through here, because people want to escape the tribulation. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, everyone here, who wants to go through the tribulation. Because then I won't get any hands raised. I'm not volunteering for it. Okay? So they look at this and they say, aha! We, since we're holding fast, just like the Sardisites, are Philadelphians. What makes a person a Philadelphian? Because they proclaim it? No. How can all of these seven churches that call themselves Philadelphian, can they be Philadelphian? I know this one here with Martin Filopello cannot possibly be because they're not holding fast the Word of God. Okay? Let's go to verse 8, Revelation 3. I know your works. Behold, I've sent before you an open door. No man can shut it, for you have a little strength and have kept my word and have not denied my name. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Do you know who the synagogue of Satan is? That's another whole question. Okay. I will make them to come and worship before your feet to know that I love you, because you have kept the word of my patience, not holding fast, have patiently kept the word of God under all circumstances. I will keep you from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. So therefore, everyone wants to escape the tribulation. Luke 21 says, pray that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things which shall come to pass. Correct? You read, as we covered last week, Revelation 12, and unto the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a times from the face of the serpent. Right? But maybe, we would be too much like the children of Israel. Now, I just had gone through, just have completed going through Exodus 16. Now, you talk about things that really were tough. You read and study Exodus 16, and on this Passover chapter I just gave you, it is amazing. It is absolutely amazing. Do you think that, you know, the minister is going to call you so you can escape? Do you think you're going to get a plane and go there? You remember when it was announced that the Worldwide Church of God was negotiating to get leases to fly to Jordan to have King Hussein give us Petras so we could all live in those caves? Okay? Now, what if God didn't send you? And you got to those caves, and you ran out of food, and you ran out of water, and God didn't give you manna as he did in Exodus 16. False alarm. Have there been false alarms? Have we lived through false alarms? Yes. Okay. So, by proclamation, you're not going to make God make you something that God that you are not before God. And the question was brought up, what if every one of all these little churches and big churches of God everywhere in the end time are really all Laodiceans? And that's the age we live in, not what we call ourselves. And that's the age that God has called us in. Question, do we have any control over what God has decided to do in history? No. We had no control over ourselves being born. We didn't make ourselves male or female. Can we make God to honor what we declare, that we are Philadelphians and God must take us to a place of safety? No way. So, the message is to all seven churches, to all attitudes of all people, everywhere, that these are the main problems of the Church of God. Wherever your problems fit in here, you draw close to God, change and repent and overcome. That's the whole message of it. Christ is the one who is going to save us. Christ is the one who is going to take us to a place of safety if we go. And he's going to do that via the angels. He's not going to leave it up to the decision of people. It won't happen. He's not going to do it because of an incorporation. He's not going to do it because of a name. He's going to do it because we have stayed close to God, that we can be counted worthy. Let's finish this little section by going to Luke 21, please. Okay, here we are. Luke 21 and verse 34. Take heed to yourselves. That's the whole key. Each individual must draw close to God himself. And as we have seen with free moral agency, and I was discussing this with a man this week, if there's free moral agency, there is free moral agency. Which means you have the responsibility to choose. And in that responsibility, whether you choose for good or whether you choose for bad, it's your choice. And we can be thankful that there is a God who is greater than all of our choices, who is greater than the sum combined total of every human choice through all human history. That for all the stupidity of us as human beings and all of the evil of us as human beings, God is going to undo it. Now, I saw part of it last night, and it really, really got to me. And I had to go out of the room and go do something else because it was one of these police reports on television. And there was this couple that was arrested for abusing their baby. Okay? They had the baby taken away. 2 years later, just before the baby was ready to be adopted, they got the two-year-old back. And once they got the two-year-old back, they systematically took turns drowning that child in the toilet. Now, that is the extreme choice for evil. And we can thank God that there is the second resurrection to undo all of that. And that's only one little blip of one little account of one little life, which God says he's not going to lose one. And believe me, the next time anyone comes up to me and says, "Why did God allow that?" I just may be a dump truck and unload on them and tell them God had nothing to do with that. But now you know the impact of your own choices. That really got to me last night. So here it is. Take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your heart, because that's what God is going to judge, your hearts, not what you call yourself, not what you say that you're going to do. And oh, by the way, I just got my first introduction to it's by Cohan, and it's Every Man's Talmud, and I really understand from reading some of that what works of law is really about. Okay, but the basic sum of this is this, that if you do something which obligates God, then you are telling God what to do. And that, brethren, is the heart and core of the problem with Judaism. Okay? That is. Okay? No one's going to tell God what to do under any circumstances, period. We can pray to God, we can beg God, we can ask God, but if God is God, who's going to tell God what to do? Nobody. All right? So take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting, which is not surfing, but that is high living, and drunkenness, which is both physical and spiritual. You can put in your notes or your margin Revelation 17, that all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, okay? And at the end time, have all nations drunk of it? Yes. Absolutely. Do we know anything as we ought to? Horribly not. Do we love as we ought to? God forbid that we say we're perfect in love. We've got to grow in that. You know, just like the report has come out about the WCG, what are they doing? They're granting divorces right and left everywhere. If someone is in the CGI, Church of God International, if one mate is in Church of God International, which believes exactly the same thing, and one mate is in Worldwide Church of God, Worldwide Church of God says you can put away the mate that's in Church of God International because he's an unbeliever. Is that not a doctrine of the Nicolaitans, that we will set up an organization and a structure which you shall worship and you will follow unto death this organization and God go away? Never happen. Okay? No. And the cares of this life. That's why we have the Sabbath every week. So that we can put the cares of this life away. And I have a lot of cares of last week that I have shed today, and I'm glad to. Unfortunately, tomorrow I'll pick them back up again. All right? So that day comes upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come all the, on all them that dwell upon the face of the whole earth. Okay, and has our understanding of prophecy in the past really been accurate? You tell me which one of the churches of God prophesied that Eastern Europe would fall apart. You tell me which one that has prophesied that Russia would collapse. You tell me which one that prophesied exactly when Christ would return. None. None. Because we are to walk by faith. That's why. We are to walk in the love of God. That's why. So we can't stand up and say, oh, I know prophecy. We don't know prophecy. Now, we're going to cover some things in prophecy. And please, I'm telling you, this is not doctrine. This is a study chart that we're going to go in to give us some scope of understanding. Okay? Not dogma. That's why it's on a chart. Okay? Could change. Could not be right. It could be have many things that are wrong in it. But at least it's a vehicle to begin thinking about how some of these things possibly could be. But I guarantee you, I'm not going to stand up and say, brethren, this chart is the inspired word of God. I've seen hundreds of charts. I've made many myself. When I was in Ambassador College, I charted the whole compendium of Dr. Hay. The whole compendium, okay? And guess what? I loaned it to somebody and didn't get it back. All that work, it was 20 feet long. Okay? I had to stand up in a chest of drawers and do it. Of what value is it? It's interesting. Is it good for salvation? Nah. Is it interesting to look at? Yes. Does it help us understand a few things as we go along? Yes. And so that's what we're doing here. Okay? Now, verse 36. Watch you therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape. Who is going to count you worthy? God is. Who's going to make the judgment that you go? God is. Who is responsible to God that we do the best we can? We are, each of us individually, correct? And I'll tell you this, that the longer that you're in the church of God, the longer you have God's Spirit, the more detestable that human nature really is, beginning with your own. That's just part of growing. Do you think that God, when He calls you, that you could bear to really comprehend the depths and depravity of human nature? No. I mean, we're just concerned about getting right with God by the time we're baptized. This comes way down the road when you live and you understand some of these things. Okay? That you may be counted worthy to escape these things. Now, there are two ways to escape. Number one, you're taken to a place of safety. Number two, you die. Maybe there's a third way kind of in between that where you are, it's not quite as bad as someplace else. Okay? All these things that shall come to pass, and what is the goal for everyone? Whether you escape them or not, stand before the Son of Man. That's the whole goal in everything, isn't it? Stand before the Son of Man. And that's the whole goal of anything that we're trying to do or provide or work or write about or preach about or study about. Okay? Now, here is the second chart. The first chart that we had last week, which went with last week's sermon, was a chronological outline of Revelation based upon the timing of the events. Okay? In that chart, I did one thing, which you probably saw, concerning Revelation 13 and the second beast. So turn to that first chart if you have it. Okay? In the first chart that we have, look at Revelation 3. I have the first beast with the wound that was healed. Revelation 13, come down the right-hand side of the column and come to Revelation 13. Okay? Then you come across and you have the beast that had the beast with the seven heads and ten horns that had the deadly wound which was healed. Okay? Right below it, you have the second beast. And you will see that I put a little speculation there, which is this. That second beast has two horns that looks like a lamb but speaks as a dragon. Correct? So, I put there the possibility that one of the horns is the last pope and the other horn is the next to the last pope. Possible. So I just put it there. Don't take that as gospel truth. That's only a thought to try and understand the two horns. That's all. Since each one of the other horns that we have gone through represents a nation or a kingdom or a leader, would it not be reasonable to assume that those two horns could very well represent the last two popes at the end paving the way and doing the things with the beast? Very possible. It's not absolute. It is just possible. So I put it there just as a thought. Later on, that's something we could say, well, it's not true. It was just a thought. Not all thoughts are good thoughts. Not all thoughts are inspired thoughts. Not all thoughts are from God. Okay? Every time I do something wrong, my wife reminds me of that. And also remind her of that, too, you know, once in a while. But it is true. And that's the way it goes. And too many people take their own thoughts and say, these are God's thoughts. We don't know if they're God's thoughts or not. Okay? Now, let's go to the next chart. This is the one with all the calendar stuff on it and all the numbers and all this sort of thing, and it is considerably more complicated than the other chart that we did last week. And I'll tell you why I did this chart. Okay? I did this chart because of Revelation 11. Now let's go to Revelation 11 here for a minute. Revelation 11, and I alluded to this a little bit last week. So let's pick it up this week. Revelation 11, and it says in verse 2, Revelation 11 and verse 2, and the court that is without the temple leave out and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall be trod underfoot 42 months. We've got 40 in 2 months, 42 months, okay? Then the next verse says, and I will give power to my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, 1,260 days. Now, we have always been told in the past, which there is no place in the Bible to prove it so, okay? We've always been told in the past that if you have a prophetic year is 30 days, 360 days. Prophetic year is 360 days. Therefore, a prophetic month is 30 days. Therefore, if you divide, or rather times, you can do this. Take 42 times 30. We'll just take a minute here and do that. Take 42 times 30 and see what you come up with. You come up with 1,260. So therefore, 1,260 days equals 42 months. If 42 months in prophecy, each one contains 30 days. And I thought to myself, is that correct? And I thought to myself, where in the Bible does it say a prophetic year is 360 days? It's not there. And then I thought to myself, why, even though they are so similar in their length of time, as we just did by sleight of hand here, okay, why is one in months and why is one in days? I didn't know. Can anybody here tell me? You're close. The time might be less than a month. Okay? So I said, I don't know. Does the Bible tell me? No, the Bible doesn't tell me. So how am I going to unravel this mess? What am I going to do to try and understand this? Now, one thing that looks like it's the same period of time, Revelation 13. Let's look at the 42 months again. Okay? Revelation 13 and verse 5. And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. That is, after the deadly wound was healed. Okay? Could it be that these 42 months are the same? Very possible. How do we begin to answer that question? We got to start somewhere, don't we? I mean, we can't just say we don't know. All right, this 42 months in Revelation 13 refers to what? How long the beast rules after his wound is healed. What do we know about the beast for sure that's in a time frame that is given to us in the book of Revelation? The beast is thrown into the lake of fire when? Yes, at the end of 42 months, but what is that event? Return of Christ, yes. What's the next question? What holy day pictures the return of Christ on the earth? Trumpets, yes. And if that is so, do we not have where the 42 months end? Yes, we do. We don't know when in history that 42 months is going to end, but we know that the 42 months ends when the beast is killed. Have to be. Undoubtedly, no question about it. So, therefore, you have the beginning as to why I did this chart. And if you were here, what, two summers ago? I was thinking about it, and that's when I first started thinking about it, and I put some of these things on the blackboard. And I'm sure that I thoroughly confused you with the blackboard. But you all agreed and looked satisfied, and I knew that that wasn't so because it wasn't clear in my mind. So I went home and I did this chart. Okay? So I started at the lower right-hand corner. Now this chart is based upon two great principles which are true. Number one, the holy days. Number two, the calculated calendar. Those two things. And I started at the lower right-hand corner, and guess what day I started with? Trumpets. So if you look at the lower right-hand corner, you see trumpets in my very own handwriting. Okay? Now, what I did at the end of each year was this. Okay? I put trumpets, and then I gave for each square the number of days down to the next holy day, which is atonement. Okay? And then to the Feast of Tabernacles, which begins what? The millennium, right? Okay. Trumpets, Christ returns with his feet on the ground, and the beast and false prophet are cast into the lake of fire, correct? Yes. We know that from Revelation 19. All right, so that's where I started. So you will see that at that very last trumpets, that's the first place I started because I said the end is the end regardless of when the end comes in history. It is the end. Is that not true? And if the end is trumpets, when Christ returns, that's the end of human reign, correct? Yes. So the beast and false prophet are cast into the lake of fire. So you will see in the notation there that I have it, the beast and false prophet cast in the lake of fire right there at trumpets. All right? You come down to atonement. What's the very next thing in Revelation 20 that happens after the beast and false prophet are cast in the lake of fire? Satan is bound. Which pictures which holy day? Day of Atonement, yes. So that's why I have right here Saint and Bound. Okay? And I said, what calendar are we actually dealing with today? The Hebrew calculated calendar, correct? Yes. And as far as we are able to determine from everything that we know, that is the correct way to do things today. What if, then, was the next question. What if we need to do this according to the calculated calendar? I said, why not? Why not? So, I said, all right, at the end time, we know that there are 7 years at the end. In the middle of the 7 years is when the tribulation starts. General understanding, correct? So then I had to make some other assumptions based upon the Word of God to get a place to start. That's why this... Now then, I had to make a couple of other assumptions. Since the end is the end, could it be, I don't know, but could it be that the Feast of Trumpets, which ends the last or the seventh year, could it be that that is the end of a 19-year time cycle because 19-year time cycles are used in the calculated calendar? I said, I don't know. But in order to start somewhere, I'm going to assume that the last year, not only being the end of the reign of man and the beginning of the Jubilee, okay, but it is the 19th year in a 19-year time cycle, so that all cycles will end at the same time. So I said that was reasonable to do. Therefore, let me give you a little warning. Since it may not be the end of a 19-year time cycle, you always have to have that, okay? That means that in relationship to what we have here, it could be off 30 days one way or the other. Okay? So that's why, and I want to give all of these prefaces before I get into this. However, this gives us some structure to look at things, doesn't it? Okay? Now, something very interesting happened when I did that. And this fell by coincidence. When I said, okay, I will assume and accept for the sake of this chart, not for doctrine, but for this chart to understand the flow of events, that it is the end of a 19-year time cycle. Look at what we came up with as you count back. Let's go to the left-hand column, please. Lower left-hand corner where it says 19th year. Okay? In a 19-year time cycle, we count back 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13. I about fell off my chair as I was doing this. What is 13? In the number of God. Rebellion, yes! And isn't it interesting that if it were a 19-year time cycle, the beginning of the 7-year period is what? The beginning of the 13th year, the year of rebellion. I said, woo! Whew. Very possible. Very possible. And let's go to 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter here for just a minute. Okay? Here's 2 Thessalonians 2. This becomes exciting. And about the time I started studying this, hair in the back of my neck was standing up a little bit. Because it just fit. I didn't do anything to force it. It just fit. I didn't know it was going to be year 13, which is rebellion. Okay? Now, 2 Thessalonians 2 says, verse 2, that you be not soon shaken in mind, nor be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter, as from us, is that the day of the Lord is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except the apostasy come to the full. Now, the King James does not translate that too clearly. It says there come a falling away first. And that has been misapplied by saying anyone who leaves the church has fallen away. That could be an application, but is not the application of this. Because the Greek is until the apostasy come to the full. When will the apostasy come to the full? Says, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he is God, sits in the temple of God, showing that he is God. Who is that? That is the last beast. When does the last beast come on the scene? The beginning of the seven-year period, right? Yes. Year 13, right? Yes. The apostasy symbolized by this man who says he's God comes on the scene and he's revealed. Woo! I said, boy, I got to keep going on this chart. Okay? So I think I have it up there. Yes, I have it clear up at the top here, okay? Right after trumpets, beast takes over. Upper left-hand corner. Okay? 13th year, common year. Might mention that a common year average is 354 days. So therefore, anything we do could be off as much as 30 to 33 days. Now, what I also did, I put in there two other days. If you come down to year 14... Let's come down to year 14 and come across to the right. All right? You come to Adar 1. You see the month Adar 1? Okay, that's right where it's pasted together. Okay? You see down in the lower right-hand corner I have Purim. I thought for the sake, since I put in all the seven holy days, as well as the Passover on this chart, I thought I would put in Purim, just to see if anything happened there with the Jews, or if anything fell at that time. Nothing did. Okay? Also, if you continue across, you go Adar 1, Adar 2, Passover, Pentecost, then you see 9-10 Ab, A-B. 9th and 10th of Ab commemorates what day in history? Temple is destroyed, yes. When? Both destructions. Jeremiah's destruction and 70 AD destruction. Both 9th and 10th of Ab. And when the temple was being destroyed by Titus in 70 AD, all of the synagogues around the world were reading, rocking back and forth, and reading the Lamentations of Jeremiah right when it was going down. So I thought, boy, I better put Ab in here just to see if anything happens then. The only thing that I could see that may have happened was you come down to the next Ab, which is year 15, Satan is cast down. Now, how did I get him there? Well, we have to answer some other questions. All right? Now, I started to begin with certain things that we know are true based on the holy days. All right? I said, all right, since I put in all of the holy days here, I put them in the months they were to be, let's come down to year 19 again, and let's come over to Pentecost. Okay, you see we're way down at the bottom, year 19, come all the way across just before it says third woe, seven last plagues. See that? Just to the left of that, you will see Pentecost resurrection. That's the resurrection of the saints at Pentecost. Everybody see that? Okay. Now, in putting in Pentecost, how was I to know where Passover was going to be? And why would that be a problem? Because you don't know exactly when Passover was. You don't know if it was on in the middle of the week or if it was on a Friday. So what I did was this. I arbitrarily chose the middle of the week for the Passover. Why did I arbitrarily choose the middle of the week? Number one, because the Exodus Passover was the middle of the week. The crucifixion of Jesus Christ was the middle of the week. So therefore, as the most reasonable place for Passover would be the middle of the week, which then would give us 54 days from Passover to Pentecost. So if you look down there, you will see 54 days. Okay, you see that? Okay. Then we have 68 days from the first day of the first month in that last year until Pentecost. I just put that in there just for notation. Okay? Now, what did we learn about Pentecost last time? What happens at Pentecost? We have the resurrection, correct? Okay? So therefore, I said, what do we know about the end of the ministry of the two witnesses? First of all, the length of the ministry of the two witnesses is how long? Revelation 11 says the two witnesses are there 1,260 days. 1,260 days. When does that end? At the resurrection, correct? Now, we don't know whether that 3.5 days is included in the 1,260. So we got a little variation there. But we know that they're going to be resurrected on Pentecost. So that tells us when the end of the 1,260 days is, doesn't it? So we count backwards, and we find where the two witnesses begin. Okay, now again, remember that there is a plus or minus. This is an approximation. So we find that they begin by counting back the number of days you come to year 16. So go to the left-hand side of the chart, come to the 16th year, which says 16th, 354 days, common year, 12 months. Okay? You come to the first notation here, and I have the Feast of Trumpets. Okay, I have trumpets. You see that? See the word trumpets? Then right below it, 1,367 days. To the resurrection from that point, from that Feast of Trumpets. Now that's just a notation to let us know where we are. Okay? Notice what we have here. Less 32 days brings us to 1,335. Now we'll get to 1,334. We've always wondered, what is the 1,335 days? I'll give you a notation when we get there, which is in my Bible, that I diligently took when I was in Ambassador College studying in that class, okay? It'll blow your mind. All right. So, we come over here. We come over to trumpets. Let's come to the next one. 32 days after trumpets, 1,335 days to the resurrection. Okay? Now we come to the next one. King of the South pushes at the King of the North. You see that? I'm going right across in year 16. We'll fill all that in just a minute. Notice, the next section, only you go to the top of that big square, and I have time, times, and half a times. 3.5 years from Pentecost, is right there. All right? Let's come to the next square. Two witnesses, 1,260 days. Now you see why you cannot have times and half a times, 1,260 days and 42 months equal the same, because they don't end at the same. Isn't that simple? Never thought of that. Is that why maybe none of these prophecies really worked out the way people said? Because they try and all lump it together? Could be. I don't know. Okay. Two witnesses, 1,260 days to the first resurrection, and I have below that plus or minus 3.5 days, and the whole thing could be plus or minus 30 days. Now you know why. Now you know why it says in Matthew 24 that no man knows the day or the hour. Right? Right. Okay? Now, that's when the two witnesses begin, and the only way we know they begin is by counting backwards from when they end. And I think that's the key to try and understanding the events at the end. The people who want to understand the events at the end begin by looking for when they begin rather than trying to understand where they end and count backwards to get an idea where they begin. Okay? So then, I got the two witnesses there, and I said, let me look and see at this thing here. So I said, let's look at some of the other days that are there. Let's try 2,300 days. I've never seen any prophecy that has fulfilled it any better than our understanding of the desolation of the temple during Antiochus Epiphanes' days of 1,150 morning and evening sacrifices. Okay, which is literally true. That did literally happen. So I said, who knows? Maybe that's not the full understanding. So I said, let's put 2,300 days on there, which we find in Daniel, the 8th chapter. We won't turn there. I'll let you study that. So what I did, I said, all right, I came back 2,300 days. And if you look at year 13, go to the left side of the chart, come clear to the top, year 13, and come across, go past Passover, past Pentecost, and right there, you see, I made a notation. 2,300 with a little T over the top of it. You see that? That's 2,300 days until trumpet. See that right at the top on year 13? Down toward the right-hand part of the chart? Right at year 13. Just come right across the top. Okay? Then I have 2,300 with an A over it. Because we don't know when the 2,300 days end. Do they end at trumpets or do they end at atonement? I don't know. Long and short is, I couldn't get the 2,300 days to fit anywhere. So I can't help you on that. All right? Now, the next thing we come to is in the book of Daniel. Let's turn there. Let's go to the book of Daniel. Daniel, the 12th chapter. And believe me, I've heard so many different prophecies about Daniel, the 12th chapter. Okay, let's read it. Let's pick it up. Daniel 12 and verse 9. And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed and sealed, closed up and sealed till the time of the end. That's why everybody says we're living in the end times, regardless of how far back you go in history, because they want to say that they understand the prophecies. Well, all have fallen on their face so far. Okay? And I'm not saying that this gives us a greater understanding, and I'm not saying that we fully understand this, but I'm just saying that. Okay? Verse 10, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. Now you know what's wrong with the world? There it is right there. None of the wicked understand. But the wise shall understand. And by doing this chart, I'm not saying now we're wise and now we understand, but at least it gives us a tool to nudge maybe a little closer to some understanding. Verse 11, from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Verse 12, now we'll get to the 1,290 days, that's 1,290 days here in just a minute. Okay? Verse 12, blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1,335 days. And he was saying this to Daniel. But go your way till the end be, for you shall rest, that is, die and be in your grave, and stand at the resurrection in your lot at the end of the days. So I said, all right, I looked at my notes here. First of all, in my Bible, to see how far we were misled before. I'll read them to you. And this was taught at Ambassador College with no apology. Okay? Their version of the 1,290 days is this. You write these following numbers in your notes. 637. 637. 637. Does anyone know what 637 means? I will tell you. That is 637 A.D. when the Mosque of Omar was built on the temple site area, not right exactly on the temple site. Now then, since that's the abomination, okay, 1,290 years later, you add 1290 to 637 and see what you come up with. Add 1290 to 637 and see what you come up with. 1927. Guess what great famous event happened in 1927, which we were told in Ambassador College. Mr. Herbert Armstrong came to understand the Word of God. So therefore, that's why it's 1927 after 1,290 days. Needless to say, he's long gone from the scene. Now then, another little sleight of hand to make a doctrine fit the Bible. Add the difference between 1290 and 1335, which is 45 days. So on your 1927, add 45 days. What do you get? 1972. Does that not ring a bell for all the longtime members? Huh? And when we did this in 1962, this sounded real. What was to take place in 1972? Go to a place of safety. Yes. My wife and I rejoiced we'd never get old. Now we look at each other and wonder. Okay. Isn't that true? Yes. All right. Wrong interpretation, needless to say. Okay. Is that not self-centered? Is not that not twisting the scriptures? Yes. Okay. Now, so what I did, I said, hey, I don't want to make this same mistake. So if the 1,335 years ends at the first resurrection, because that's when Daniel is going to be raised, we count backwards. 1,335 days. Let's go to our chart. Let's go to year 16. Come to the left-hand side of the chart to 16th year. Common year, 354 days, 12 months. Come over to 1,335 days. And we were always told that, is this when the church that goes to its place of safety is taken to the place of safety? I don't know. But you see where 1,335 days fall. Don't you? Okay? Come over, next one. There's 1367, come over to the next one. Okay, you see 1335 days? What is interesting about 1335 days? It fell there naturally from the resurrection at Pentecost, okay? That's where, if it ends at Pentecost, the resurrection, then you come back to 1,335 days. What is this approximately a month after? You look at what I have here. I've got trumpets, atonement, tabernacle. You see that? See where I have that there at the beginning of the 16th year? I have trump, tab, and at. Those are abbreviations for trumpets, atonement, and tabernacle. Okay? It's a month after tabernacles, right? Now, a month after tabernacles is when? A month after tabernacles is when? It's easy. Is it in the spring? No. Is it in the summer? No. Is it in the winter? No. When is it? In the fall. Let's go to Matthew 24, please. Now, if what we have just covered, and if we have placed the 1335 days reasonably correct, then notice what it says concerning fleeing. Revelation 24, verse 16, which is when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet. Okay? This may not necessarily be the exact same time, but we have an interesting parallel here. Okay? Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house, neither let him which is in the field turn back to take his clothes. Woe to them that are with child, to them to give suck in those days. Pray that your flight be not in the winter, nor on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world, nor shall ever be. So, if we are to flee, it's not in the winter, not in the spring, it's not in the summer. 1335 days is 1 month after tabernacles. Okay? Now, that's why when you go backward one more year, go back to year 15, and come clear across to where I have Satan cast down, 9th and 10th of Ab. Okay? Now, that is only a guess on my part. See that, where I have Satan cast down, 9th and 10th of Ab? Reason being, let's go to Revelation 12. Okay, Revelation 12 and verse 12. Therefore, rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil is coming down unto you, having great wrath, because he knows he has a short time. How long is a short time? I don't know. Does the Bible tell us? No, it doesn't. But we know that short time is before the church goes to a place of safety. Now let's read it. Verse 13. And the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, and he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. How long is the persecution? Doesn't tell us, does it? But the persecution precedes what? It precedes going to a place of safety. Place of safety is for how long? Times and a half a time, or 3.5 years from the resurrection at Pentecost, counting backwards. Okay? So therefore, that's why I put there, is this where Satan is cast down? Possibly. So I just have it there as something to try and get it in perspective. All right. Now, let's come a little bit further and let's see some other things that take place. Okay? Let's come again to year 16. We just covered the 1335 days. Now, notice right below that I have King of the South. I said, is this when the King of the South pushes at the King of the North? See that? I don't know. But we know that precedes, that's the first event which starts everything, right? And at the time of the end, Daniel 12, shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come at him with a whirlwind with chariots and all of this, okay? So then I have come over the next one, the king of the north starts his assault against the king of the south. Okay? Now, where does the king of the north come into? He comes into Egypt and Libya and the glorious land. Okay? Says that Daniel 12. Is that when the two witnesses are raised up? Because they have the two witnesses coming next. You see that, two witnesses, 1260 days? Let me just answer right here, the two witnesses. They are not in the one person of Martin Filippello. I can tell you that right now. Nor is Herbert Armstrong going to be raised from the dead to be one of them. The two witnesses, if you read Zechariah 3 and Zechariah 4, are none other than, number 1, chapter 3 of Zechariah, the high priest at the temple, number 2, the governor of Judea. And when would be the time for them to be raised up by God to be the two witnesses? Then when the king of the north comes into the Holy Land and voila, there are the two witnesses, right? Are they needed before then? No. Where do the two witnesses have their ministry? In Jerusalem. It fits. It fits. Okay? Then we come down and we see some very interesting things. Okay? Let's come over after the two witnesses. Then we come to Adar 1. Let's come over to the next one where that square says 30, Nisan 10. You see that? You see, nice and 10. Right after that, I have the Passover. You see that? This is all in year 16. All right? See where I have 10 nice on Passover? Right below that arrow, I have 4 days before Passover. Is 1,290 days from trumpets. Ooh, the abomination it makes desolate. 1,290 days. What is the 10th of Nisan for? That's when they choose the lamb for the Passover, right? And if they have the temple... That is when it is made desolate on the day they select the lamb. Is that when the man of sin goes to the temple of God saying he is God? Now, what do you think this is going to do to the Jews? What do you think this is going to do to the Jews? They are willing right now to destroy the world to keep their kingdom, brethren, in case you didn't know it. They have over 200 atomic bombs. And a lot of other things that they haven't told anybody about. So what do you think this is going to do to the Jews? If you were a zealot Jew, what would you want to do? Kill the man who desecrated the temple, right? Yes. Now, let's move a little bit to the right. Let's go to the next section. We have Pentecost, and I've got a little variance in Pentecost, okay? You see Pentecost with that first little asterisk? Okay? Notice what I have here. 42 months, beast is revived from his deadly wound. Okay? Counting back from his destruction in the lake of fire, 42 months is right there. What? Within 7 weeks of desecrating the temple. He receives a deadly wound. By whom? I don't know. It doesn't tell us who the deadly wound comes from, but it wouldn't stretch my imagination to realize that it may be some Jews who are angry at him for sitting in the temple that they just built so that they could bring the Messiah on the earth, and now they've spoiled it all and we're going to kill this guy. Would it be the first assassination that the Jews have ever done? No. No way. So that's why I have right here, the beast is revived. Okay, that's the beginning of his last 42 months. Revelation 13, the beast that one of his heads received a deadly wound, and the deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast and worshiped the beast and say, who's able to make war against the beast? Who's able to stand against the beast? So after he's resurrected, miraculous satanic resurrection from the dead. I mean, this gets exciting now. I mean, this really gets into, you know, they could do a really good movie on this one, all right? We won't have to wait for the movie. We got it right here. Okay? Now, all those things fit in right there. Now, does that make any sense? Do these things make any sense laid out this way? Okay, it becomes a little clearer, doesn't it? Okay? Now, this is not new doctrine. This is only a chart based upon the calculated calendar with the holy days to try and get some understanding of when these events occur. But, regardless of how accurate this is or not, you can be guaranteed that time frame beginning just before the last 3.5 years is going to be dynamite time, brethren. And there are going to be a lot of things that are going to be happening. Okay? We can see that for sure. Now, let's come down the chart here. Okay? Let's come down to year 18. Year 18. And this also cross-references with the chart that you had last week. Okay, year 18 is a common year, 354 days, 12 months. You come over here, 629 days to the res, R-E-S, that's the resurrection. Then you have trumpets, at, which is atonement, tab, which is tabernacles. Keep coming across, you have 8R1, 29 days, you have the Passover. Then you have the sixth seal. Now, I couldn't figure out where the other seals fit exactly. We do know that we think that the second seal starts right when the beast is revived. Maybe it starts a little before then. Maybe it's when the king of the north comes against the king of the south. Okay? We don't know. So I didn't put in all of the five seals leading up to it. But I put in the sixth seal, which precedes Pentecost. As we covered last time, the 144,000 and the great innumerable multitude are sealed on the Feast of Pentecost, undoubtedly. So they have a very short physical time after they're converted till the resurrection, exactly 1 year. Okay, so we have after that, we have the trumpet plagues beginning a short time after the sealing of the great innumerable multitude, and 144,000. Okay? So let's come down to year 19 again. Come to the left hand of the column down to 19th leap year. Okay? 13 months, 384 days. It's interesting if it is true that the last year is a leap year has an extra month. Because that gets in all of the events that have to be gotten in. Notice I start out with trumpet. T-R-U-M-P. I have that as the beginning of the first trumpet plague. Okay? Now, you will see, come right down below the dot where I have Trump. Come down to where you see an arrow pointing to the left. Come all the way across on that arrow and you see trumpet plague, seven trumpet plagues. Those trumpet plagues run from trumpets to Pentecost at the resurrection. And there is nothing that says that the last trump cannot be blown on Pentecost. You can't have the resurrection on the Feast of Trumpets where in 30 seconds you zap up to heaven, stay there a couple of hours, and zap back down to earth. And have the seven last plagues all poured out within that 1 day period. Impossibility. Okay? However, what happens at every Feast of Trumpets, as far as God is concerned? Blow the trumpets, yes. Nothing difficult about that. Okay? So at the last Feast of Trumpets, when Christ comes to the earth, voila, they're blown again, but also on the atonement following it, because it's a jubilee year, so the trumpets are blown again then. Okay? So that's why I have the seven trumpet plagues lasting from trumpets, beginning the first trumpet plague, to Pentecost, the last trumpet, the resurrection. Now, come down below that line, and you will see I have trumpet plagues 1 to 4 within the first month. Why do I have that? I have 1-4 TP. That's 1 to 4 trumpet plagues. Why do I have that? Because they all occur very rapidly. If you read Revelation, the 8th chapter, it goes bam, 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 1, 2, 3, 4. Then it says, woe, 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 woe to the inhabitants of the earth by the reason of the other trumpeters which are yet to sound. So the fifth trumpet plague we know is how long? It tells us, doesn't it? You can read it, Revelation 9. How long is the fifth trumpet plague? 5 months. Yes, correct. It's 5 months. So I put in 5 months there. Then the sixth trumpet plague, that's the gathering of the army, and I've got a total of 3 months there to the resurrection. You see that? Sixth TP, second woe. See that right at the very bottom line, right in the middle. Okay? Then you come over a little bit to the ending. Seventh trumpet is the resurrection. So we're all raised to meet Christ in the air. Okay? Now what? What happens when we meet him in the air? Revelation 15, we all stand on the sea of glass. We all sing the song of Moses, which is the song of victory over the enemy. Then what happens after that? Yes, the wedding feast, the getting to know each other and all of that, plus we see the seven last plagues poured out, which takes and consumes the time from Pentecost, shortly afterwards, until the Feast of Trumpets. Okay? Now, you can read Revelation 16, and you will see that it takes some time for this, for these seven last plagues to come. Okay? So this...
Okay, now let's turn to Psalm 149. You might say this is the resurrection psalm, or you could say that this is a psalm which may indicate some of the things that could be going on the Sea of Glass while we meet Christ in the air and then see the vengeance of God with the seven last plagues poured out. Verse 1, Psalm 149. Praise ye the Lord, sing unto the Lord a new song, which we will, and is praised in the congregation of the saints, that's all the resurrected ones, on the Sea of Glass. Let Israel rejoice in him that made him. Let the children of Zion be joyful in their king. Let them praise his name in the dance. Now, I don't know if we'll be dancing up there or not, but who knows what will happen. Let them sing praises unto him with the timbrel and the harp. It says back there in Revelation 15 that we're going to be harping on harp, so I guess that's the way it's going to be. How quickly we can learn it, I don't know. Maybe we'll, at the resurrection, have it built in. We can just pluck and harp away, and we got it. Who knows? For the Lord takes pleasure in his people. He will beautify the meek with salvation. There it is, the resurrection, beautified with salvation. Where then we will look like God, we will be as God, we will shine as the stars of heaven above forever and ever. Let all the saints be joyful in glory. Yes, no more pain, sorrow, agony, and all this sort of thing. Let them sing aloud upon their bed. I don't know exactly how that fits in. Not everything in the psalm here necessarily fits in. Parts of it fit in. This is another thing someone's surely going to say, well, we must, as spirit beings, do we have to lay down and sleep? I don't know. I can't tell you. Let's go on from there. Verse 6. Let the high praises of God be in their mouth and the two-edged sword in their hand, because we're going to come back with Christ, Revelation 19. We're going to have a sharp two-edged sword in our hands, and we're going to fight with him. To execute vengeance upon the heathen, which is what we're going to do, and punishments upon the people, which is what we're going to do, to bind their kings with chains, which is what we're going to do, and their nobles with fetters of iron, to execute judgment, to execute upon them the judgment written, this honor have all his saints. Praise praise ye the Lord. So nothing could fill in much clearer the things that will go on the sea of glass as depicted in Revelation 15. And so that pretty well shows the flow of events. Now, I also want to give another disclaimer here at the end that these charts do not represent new doctrine. All these charts are trying to do is just give us a flow of how a possibility they might fit together. So this is not cast in concrete forever. It's just on burnable paper. And so it's just something to help you study, go through the book of Revelation, book of Daniel, and put it all together and give you something to think on. And maybe you'll come up with some things as a result of this where collectively all together we can understand prophecies even more.